Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and the Power Hour Nation. So happy that you joined us today with our special guest, Mr. Joseph Mayer. We've had a great conversation about Joseph's estimates and so forth on where we're going with many things, from housing to the economy to the U.S. dollar. Now, at the break, Joseph and I were discussing that, you know, there are still some good companies, obviously, and good opportunities. And Joseph was saying that he both bought and advised folks to buy water, drinking water, potable water company stocks 7 years ago, and is still holding them. And we were discussing how a gallon of water at retail prices is approaching the cost of a gallon of fuel, gasoline, and how when the I've watched documentaries on this, when the various glaciers around the world continue to melt, and so many of the communities around the world at the base or midway to the base of these mountains and glaciers, when they melt and that water stops, well, that ends that agriculture in that area, period. In many parts of the world, and so water is too good. Fresh drinking water, of course, potable water, safe water is precious, no doubt, and something we can't do without as humans for more than 6 or 7 days without perishing. And yes, it's valuable indeed. I mean, you talk about a necessity, it's right up there at the top of the list. So it was an interesting conversation that we had, Joseph. I just reviewed for the folks. It's something, you know, when you think about taking baths and hot tubs and long showers. And I remember when I played football, we would, in the hot weather, we'd go in, soap up, wash off, and then stand under the cold water for about 20 minutes to cool down and so forth. And in the cold weather, you know, nice hot showers, and we'll stand in there, and some folks will turn the water on and leave it running. And, you know, we waste a lot of water in our society. And I've always thought that will come the day that we'll regret that. They continue to build in Las Vegas, for example, like there's no tomorrow, and yet the water supply in Lake Mead, you know, goes down by the day. So we're not. Would you say, in general, Joseph, we're all so busy with whatever we're doing that we don't seem to be paying proper attention to many things, maybe, and including where our money is invested these days. But the way we treat water is just another example, isn't it?
Well, I think when you look at the bigger picture, there's no question we're going to run out of drinking water. Not a question of if, it's a question of when. I think when you talk about the bigger picture, most people don't realize we've more than doubled the population of the United States since 1950. But I think when you take a look at during the period of time that we speak, coming from 1950 to where we are currently, we've literally doubled our water usage. As you know, Wayne, 70% of the world is covered by water, but only 2.5% is fresh water. The human body, and we touched on this early, is made up of 60% water. Most people don't realize that.
Yep, that's absolutely true. We need water. You know, I remember years ago, Joseph, it must be 30 years ago, with my dad, we were down in the Netherlands Antilles on the island St. Martin, and looking at a marine construction project for one of the big timeshare outfits on the water, and also consulting to the government about a breakwater on the one side of the island because of erosion and so forth. And so we were there, and I remember the fellow, actually, became a friend of my dad's. He was a governor general of the Netherlands Antilles, Mr. Frank Mingo. He took us to show us a project that was going in, and we had to drive to the top of one of the mountains there on the island. And he was showing us from that view what was going to go in, a huge complex and a huge marina. And my goodness, he, even in those days, it was just a huge investment was going to happen. Well, as we were up there looking at all this, a tug boat pulling a big square barge was in our view. And I said, I wonder what he's hauling. And Mr. Mingo said, fresh water. I said, fresh water? He said, yes, we import our water, desalinization and so forth, to make salt water potable is just too expensive. And I noticed on the hotel bills way back then, Joseph, there was an energy surcharge on the bill. There was a water surcharge. So I think maybe what most people or many people don't realize is there are many parts of the world that do not have a source of their own fresh water. An island like St. Martin, where there's been mega billions invested in vacation resorts and casinos and so forth, and yet there is no water there. And you can bet when there's a tugboat and a barge worth millions of dollars burning diesel fuel like it's going out of style, delivering 3,000 or 4,000 tons of water at a shot, that's expensive water, and it did have to come from somewhere. So yeah, I think it's probably a safe bet that while we will not have enough, so I don't know what we'll do in the world when that day comes, but it won't get cheaper in price or cost, that's for sure. Joseph, what other...
Well, you know, Wayne, in some parts of the world, people spend more money on water than they do on food.
Well, that's right. It's been heartbreaking for me to see some pictures in magazines and so forth where you see a child with a glass jar or a plastic cup. I recall the one that was in a clear glass jar, and he dipped it into a really, it looked like a puddle, and clearly not clear potable water. It was dirty water, and I think that there's more people in the world than we realize that are in that situation, Joseph, which is, it's very sad to see, heartbreaking to see, but it's just a reality. What other commodities could you see, if any, like water, could you see there being a shortage of as populations grow and around the world?
Well, I think we're going to have food shortages, and I think we're seeing the early signs of that as we speak. I think when you talk about what's been going on with climate change and, more importantly, just the weather changes we've seen here in the U.S., we've got droughts going on, as you know, in the Midwest. And we've had severe heat in a lot of the areas of the country where food production is very heavy. And we're also getting now flooding, and we're getting storms that are coming in and doing significant damage to the crops that are certainly being cultivated to meet the demand that's certainly increasing for quality food. So we are witnessing, and I'll say again, changes that have taken place a decade ago we wouldn't have believed even possible.
No, I agree with you there as well. And you know, scientists, of course, Joseph, have warned for years now that heavy weather events, storms, hurricanes, tornadoes, and so forth, will increase in both number and severity as time goes on due to this global warming. And I've watched quite a few documentaries over this past month. One was an excellent one. Woody Harrelson was the narrator, and it was called Kiss the Earth. And boy, it was a fascinating show, primarily about soil, our soil on the earth, how we're mishandling it, and how it may be the answer to reverse global warming. And I thought it was just a great show called Kiss the Earth, if any of the folks listening care to tune in. That was on Netflix, and just recently I watched it. So, you know, we continue to do things that are not in our best interest in this world, and our leaders they get together for these summits, Joseph, every year or two. I know the one in Vancouver a few years ago cost the Canadian government over $1 billion with all the security and so forth required for the summit for the world leaders. I don't know why these guys and ladies can't, with technology today, Zoom or do one of these other methods of seeing and talking to each other as a group and get down to it and agree on a few things. And it's just taken so much time. But this show, Kiss the Earth, it was very, I'm an environmentalist, of course, and it was very interesting to me how that may be the only way if we handle our soil differently, if we quit clearing so much land. They showed how in a short time when you till soil and you let erosion happen, you've just got dirt. And an amazing thing that they did in China to the world's most eroded place. I can't tell you where in China, but it was part of the documentary. And they showed you before pictures, and this was, it just looked like rock and sand, and there wasn't a green thing or a thing growing, nothing. And they took 14,000 square hectares, I believe it said, and they planted and they regenerated and grew things, and now it's like the Garden of Eden. They showed the end result after a few years, and that of what can happen when we have enough plants taking in carbon and putting out oxygen. You know, instead we've got these diseases in Canada. The latest one in my part in southern Ontario, the latest one to sweep through was the ash trees. The emerald ash borers have killed 1 million trees in Niagara region. I had to cut down 9 on my property that were emerald ash trees. Our pine trees have black, or our maples rather, have black splotch disease that unless we can one day burn every single leaf that falls, that's impossible, but if we could, that's the only way to kill this off, and eventually we'll lose our maple trees. The pine beetles are just destroying the pine trees, particularly in Western Canada. And, you know, these are all things that aren't natural. These things nature did not have on its agenda. And no. I personally believe, and Jim Strauss taught me many things about nature, but I personally believe that, that yes, there's no doubt that global warming man is a factor. I mean, China made no steel 20 years ago, Joseph.
No.
Today, they make 8 times more than the United States of America, which is number 2. That's like being in a room, in my opinion. Just picture you're in your kitchen, and it's normal temperature, and you put one burner on, and that's the way the world used to be in the steel industry, if we just talk about that. Then China.
Well, I think when you talk about the steel industry, as you know, starting in the decade of the 1960s, we started to see steel move overseas insofar as manufacture. First, the steel industry moved to Germany, and then eventually it moved over to Japan, which cut the prices that Germany was certainly producing cold rolled steel. And now, as you've just touched upon, we got China doing all the majority of cold rolled steel in the world. So when you look at cost cutting and you look at seeking out the cheapest worldwide labor, what we're witnessing in the economy is a continuing situation very similar to what we witnessed with steel in the 1960s, Wayne.
Well, you know, one thing I thought was very wise that your former President Trump did was he made great efforts to both keep industry in America, convinced a couple of the car plants to build the new plants in America or keep running in America and not move to Mexico or elsewhere. And I think President Trump realized both the importance of jobs and the importance of reliable supply chains that we're now, you know, we're now experiencing hundreds of thousands of personal vehicles, passenger vehicles, are sitting brand new on lots all over, all makes, waiting for computer chips from China. And the next thing I'd like to ask you, with your your tremendous knowledge of economy and your experience in these markets, Joseph. Do you think it's possible? And keep in mind that we're seeing the downside of trusting another country, a communist country no less, to produce these important parts for not only cars, many. There's tens of thousands of manufacturers in the world shut right now, shuttered right now because of these computer chips that are delayed from China. Do you see that we'll be smart enough or able to bring much of this manufacturing back to North America? A, do you think that we'll be astute enough to realize that we need to correct this situation? I know it'll cost more. The products will cost more. There's no doubt about that, Joseph. We don't, in Canada and America, we don't work for a dollar an hour or less. But will we be able to pull this off? Can it happen, in your opinion?
Well, I think it's inevitable that at some point it will happen, because I think when you talk about technology and you talk about the role it plays, more importantly, in national security, there isn't any way we could have components as important as computer chips manufactured overseas. I think it puts us at a tremendous disadvantage, Wayne.
I do, too. I was a little distressed over our leader, Prime Minister Trudeau. The first vaccine deal he made, as far as I know, we didn't get any from China. I really don't know, but the first vaccine deal he made was with China. And I just thought it's pretty ironic, really, with the COVID virus coming from that lab in China. And we just relied on them for so much. Look at the, it turned out, Joseph, we didn't have many paper stock manufacturers here in North America. Toilet paper,
no.
Hand towels. People were hoarding toilet paper and so forth when the pandemic got underway. And there was a shortage of, my goodness, at times it seemed a shortage of everything in the grocery stores. I was in Florida when the pandemic struck. And, boy, I'll tell you, I went into a Publix store, and other than some frozen stuff, there was nothing there.
No.
So, you know,
I think we witnessed hoarding. I think as we started to see supplies tightening, people started hoarding and buying more than they certainly had an immediate need for, and just stocking up. And as it turns out, they were right.
Well, they were indeed. I was surprised myself that things would be in that short of supply, that we had that kind of just-in-time delivery economy. And, I was hoping all along through President Trump's term that he would be able to bring back more and more manufacturing into America. Canada, in my opinion, has become a less and less friendly place for business. It truly has, and not the least of which the problems being taxation and, for a government who has a very small defense department, can't meet its NATO obligations for years now. Ireland did, Canada can't, little Ireland did, and they got the temporary seat on the Security Council that our leader was after. So we can't even use, like America can, a huge defense department to defend the free world. And yet we're in at least as bad a shape as the United States is as far as debt goes. And we don't have the, as they say, don't have the excuse of defending the world. We can't. Our Navy has been downranked to a number 5, the same as Malaysia and the Philippines, which are both on Canada's permanent aid list. So, Canada needs to stop spending so much outside the country to be as nice as we can be to everybody and pay attention in our own. The leader just announced $2 billion for affordable housing in India, Well, don't you know we have a homeless problem here in Canada, Joseph?
I know you've had a homeless problem for quite some time. Ours here in the U.S. is worsening by the day. I'm sure you understand why.
Yeah. So, you know, my grandma used to say charity starts at home, but I don't really know what the point is. But, boy, so I have less faith, truthfully, that Canada will be successful in retaining industry. They're really, we've lost a lot of industry, Joseph, that's closed and moved. Just a lot of industry. One of our companies, services industry, primarily the metal industry, and the number of factories in this Niagara region, I'm going to guess that we've lost 85%.
That's
so far, they've closed or moved to another place. All those good jobs, those good, steady, full-time jobs have gone with it. And, I think President Trump understood that, and he was sure making a good effort at retaining industry and bringing them back. And I don't have much faith that Canada can do it. I believe America could. What would, in your opinion, though, what would that truthfully do? I mean, we're buying from China now because it's cheap. Well, what kind of picture do you see if we could bring most of this manufacturing back to America? How could it be affordable for the average man to buy all American-made goods?
Well, I think when you talk about China, and I'm sure you'll agree, had it not been for us granting most favored nation status in 1980, and that's quite a long time ago, China could have never grown into the economy it's become today. We made it possible. But when you talk about the decent paying jobs and you talk about the things we use daily being manufactured overseas and the decent paying jobs that were once part of that manufacturing haven't been lost forever, we changed the economic dynamics of America forever, and we're now witnessing the fruits of that encounter. We're paying for it on a daily basis. But at some point, I believe the decent-paying jobs will work their way back to America.
Let's just take a break here, Joseph, for some commercials, and we'll be right back, folks. Wayne Elliott with special guest Mr. Joseph E. Mayer with us today on the Power Hour.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 22828 on your mobile phone or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com or text Power Hour to 22828. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries. Relieve stress and anxiety and create calmness in your life with Tranquil. Available today at thepowermall.com. For a limited time, buy one Tranquil and receive the second one absolutely free. That's right, buy one Tranquil and receive the second absolutely free at thepowermall.com. Or call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Hurry, supplies are limited.
Hi, this is Catherine at the Power Hour. The Power Mall began when Joyce Riley discovered an all-natural soap that heals skin issues and can replace your bathing, laundry, and household cleaning products. That soap is Miracle 2 and is made from natural minerals and coconut extract with no added fragrances or colors and is naturally concentrated and biodegradable. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today. You'll learn why so many people say, it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
I don't know where to start. There's so many products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the Optavita Silver Lozenges. Of course, then the Oregaresp and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I thought I would discuss an item that's very valuable to my personal health and well-being. That product is called Curcumin X4000. Its potent antioxidant properties have been shown to decrease swelling and allow us to enjoy our golden years. Take control over your health today, guys. Order Curcumin by calling 877-817-9829 or order at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Welcome back, folks. Wayne Elliott with you today as your guest host, and I have with me, I've been speaking with Mr. Joseph E. Mayer, one of the smartest gentlemen I've ever spoken with about economy, money, investing, and certainly one of the most experienced with over half a century in the business is Mr. Mayer. Joseph, go on to say what you were started to say about the U.S. dollar and the currency and circulation and so forth.
Well, I think when you talk about the U.S. dollar, there's no question that we've pumped trillions of dollars into the marketplace over the last year. I think when you talk about the Federal Reserve balance sheet, as you know, going back in March 2009, the Fed balance sheet was about $800 billion. We now currently have the U.S. Fed balance sheet in excess of $8 trillion. So when you talk about money being printed and you talk about it finding a home in the equity markets and more importantly in real estate, it's no wonder we've seen valuations go to the levels that they have. But I want to touch on something that I think is very important that, again, very few people realize. If you look at the total capitalization of the S&P 500 index, Wayne, it comes in right around $36 trillion. If you take a look at the five companies that would make up 25% of the value of the S&P, that would be Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Google, and Facebook. Combined, they'd have a value of $9 trillion. So what I'm trying to say, you got five companies out of the S&P 500 index that make up 25% of the S&P 500's value.
Wow. Wow.
Again, no one talks about that. So So you're seeing concentration in fewer companies, and it's reflective of the broader market not actually participating in what is taking place in the equity markets.
That's something. I'll bet you remember Joseph back in the 80s when AT&T showed a profit, the whole network showed a profit of $6 billion.
Yes.
And the U.S. government made them break up. You got Southern Bell and New York, New England Telephone and Bell Canada and so forth. It almost seems, I mean, after what we experienced in 07, that collapse, where the big insurance company that had bought up most of the insurance industry needed a $150 billion bailout. Maybe it's just not so healthy this way, Joseph, where some of these corporations have got so large and so much control in their markets. What do you think about that?
Well, I think when you talk about how large some of these companies have become and the monopoly that they have certainly in the marketplace that they participate in, but more importantly, when you talk about the Fed's ability to bail out troubled situations, there's four prior times that the Fed has rode to the rescue in history. The rescue of Chrysler, as you know, in the 1970s, Continental National Bank in the 1980s, long-term capital management in the 1990s, and the NASDAQ high-tech and subprime mortgage firms in the early 2000s. Everybody thinks if this economy gets in trouble, the Fed's got the ability to print their way out of it. I don't think that's going to be the case if it happens, Wayne. I don't think they can print that amount of money any longer.
Excuse me, Joseph, there's a limit to everything, isn't there?
Yes, there is.
You pointed out on a previous show that personal debt, corporate debt, sovereign debt has never been higher in the world's history.
Very true.
As we talked about earlier, notwithstanding interest rates, these principal amounts are supposed to be repaid. And, you know, I've... like you, I guess, I'm an arithmetic guy. I deal in gross tons, metric tons, short net tons, pounds, and ounces. And I do arithmetic all the time, trading metal and so forth. And it's tough to see our way out of the current debt situation. I've done some arithmetic several years ago with Canada and the United States. And when you look at the total debt, talking about Canada now, you look at the total debt of the feds, you look at the provincial debt, it's like your states in the United States, our provinces, you look at the provincial debt, you look at the debt of the crown corporations that the government owns, there's
yes,
some 500 of them in Canada now. There was seven when former Prime Minister Pierre Elliott Trudeau came into office as Prime Minister. His son is now our Prime Minister 50 years later. It's just tremendous what the average working adult owes. You know, when the one thing that always shakes me up, Joseph, when they talk about debt, you know, per capita. You're talking about the elderly, the retired, the sick and hospitalized. You're talking about children and babies. There's only so many of us out in the workforce. And when you narrow it down to those numbers, it's just tremendous, these debts. Just tremendous. So, you know, you would say it's the, you know, the, certainly the average Canadian American is not able to pay their share of the debt if we looked at it that way. It's impossible.
Do you know
like
the last time the U.S. debt was paid off, in what year and by what president and what amount? I take a guess. I did the research.
No idea.
The last time the U.S. debt was completely paid off was in 1835 by President Andrew Jackson in the amount of just $58 million.
Wow. Wow. Well, Canada was debt-free in 1968, Joseph. We were debt-free, cash-rich, owned all our natural resources. I mean, Canada's made some poor deals, too, when senior Trudeau, back in the late 60s, early 70s, he was with us 13 years in total as prime minister, but when he instituted the FIRA, the Foreign Investment Review Agency,
yes,
that was to say no foreigner, no foreign company could own more than 10% of a Canadian enterprise. And so basically the U.S. oil industry got out of Canada and sold out to the Canadian government. But and you have these facts and figures, I know, Joseph. Just imagine back in the early 70s, we bought out the U.S. oil companies in Canada, but it was all based on oil being $100 a barrel 50 years ago.
Well, you know, the all-time high in the price of a barrel of oil is $147, and the all-time low in oil is about $10 a barrel. But when you talk about debt, as you know, the U.S. in 1980 was the largest creditor nation in the world. We now got the title of being the largest debtor nation in the world, all having taken place in about 40 years, Wayne.
Yeah. Well, what governments have often done, and again, to use a Canadian province, Nova Scotia, when the oil and gas recovery out of the Hibernia out in the North Atlantic Ocean started, Nova Scotia negotiated themselves some they got their share of the oil and gas revenues. And so the first boomer year was Nova Scotia's share was $438 million. Now, Nova Scotia only has, the whole province only has, I think, 1.5 million people in the whole province. So as far as people goes, it's about a quarter the size of our city of Toronto, the whole province is out in the Maritimes there. Well, what the government did was go ahead and spend the $438 million on permanent social programs. Well,
oh,
a few years went by, it dropped down to $100 million and $80 million and $40 million, and now it's gone. The rigs are being scrapped as we speak, and there is no more oil and gas revenues there that were there. And yet Nova Scotia has an extra $438 million a year social programs. So, you know, unlike business or individuals where, you know, who for the most part don't spend every penny they have, although people are spending more than they ever did in the past, our government seemed to do that. And I don't know how it works in America, but one thing that irks me here in Canada, all the government operations have a budget. Whether you're a hospital, police force, whatever you are, you have a budget. And if you don't spend your budget that you were allotted, you might get less the next year. So there's a big race for many agencies and departments. This is everywhere across the country in the thousands of government facilities. If you don't spend the budget, you might not get what you asked for next year. So there's a big spending spree towards the end of the year. Now, you know, I'd have a couple of personal experiences with that I won't say on the radio of experiences of just outrageous, really. In my case, it was a hospital trying to spend the budget and wanting to pay, believe this or not, 1,000 times more than we quoted the work at. 1,000 times more.
Wow.
Because it was getting late to use up the money. We didn't do it. I know the contractor that did, and he billed them as they asked. I mean, how much cheaper could we run the government, Joseph, if there was incentive to spend, if there was incentive to economize, be efficient, not rush to spend the dollars that are left in the budget, but rather save them, maybe a bonus system for the workers and the management instead of blowing this extra money every year. I mean, it's just a rigged game. I don't see how Canada can ever come out of this debt.
No, they can't.
So, well, you know, what happens? An old friend of mine who died last year at age 99, very influential Canadian, was among the wealthiest Canadians, a shipping company owner. I said to him once, so what could happen if we owe all this money to China and elsewhere? How can this work out in the end? And he said, I don't know, but this is exactly what he said. Well, he said, in America's case, I mean, they could mortgage the White House probably for $1 billion and the Pentagon for billions of dollars and start taking federal assets like that and borrowing more money. I said, my God, and then if they couldn't pay, what happens? China comes and forecloses? I mean, I just don't see a way for this to work out if we don't start taking the spin off the ball, Joseph, and get it spinning the other way like it used to be.
Do you know who's the largest landowner in America? The U.S. government.
No doubt.
Yes.
No doubt. I would bet the Canadian government's the largest landowner in Canada as well.
Yes, it is.
Now, in that respect, I see the Conservation Authority here buys properties, lakefront properties and all. They just bought one a mile or so from my house. Beautiful. It used to be an Easter Seals camp. Beautiful property, right on Lake Erie, huge sandy beach. Spent $4 or $5 million for it, and now sure. The gate has been closed for going into the fifth year. So not only do they spend money sometimes and acquire land, but doing nothing with it's a sin. I mean, there's our money sitting there. The public isn't enjoying it, isn't able to. The gate's closed.
No.
So, you know, I don't know what we do about this, getting government to be responsible. I guess it's the $67 question, isn't it?
Well, we're reaching the point where, quite frankly, this cannot continue. We're seeing the dollar buy less and less. We're seeing the cost of everything going up significantly. We see the standard of living all across America faltering. We're seeing rising crime. We're seeing people relocating and moving completely out of the United States and relocating in foreign countries. No question we're coming to the end of the line, Wayne. Things have just gotten so bad so quickly, people want to change and they're willing to do what's ever needed to make that change happen.
Yeah, and at the same time, you know, generally speaking, as people, we want all we can get, you know, and... That's not what our grandfathers taught us, that's for sure, but the entitlements and so forth that go on today.
Well, look at the rent moratorium. You've had people in the United States not pay the landlord in over a year, and they're still looking to extend the moratorium into 2022.
Yeah.
They want to live rent-free.
Yeah. I thought myself, and I've said this a number of times, Joseph, that I think a good start, I don't know what this would take, I have no idea, I'm not a political guy, but I do know this much, this party system that we have in Canada and the United States has just become so toxic that even when good people get into office, they're made to toe the party line. And I think if somehow we could eliminate the parties, have individuals run in their district as they would even in the party system, and give their campaign pitches to their local constituents, and then together, you know, in our country become a parliament, in your country a Congress, and everybody has the obligation to act in the best interest of the country, but speak your mind, cast your vote the way you believe you should cast it, not the way the party tells you. I mean, when we see the one thing I like about Canada is our election campaigns are only allowed to be, I think it's less than 6 weeks is the maximum in Canada. That's about the only positive thing I can tell you about our system is we don't have 2 years of campaigning where nobody's paying attention to their jobs. Although the way things are going, you wouldn't think they're paying such close attention to their jobs either. It's maybe always about just get reelected, you know. And I really do think that would make a huge difference. And maybe we'd have a chance at some smart government. I mean, you turn on the news, you watch it and read it, Joseph. The parties are constantly fighting with each other, shooting darts, trying to nail each other on improprieties and so forth, and you wonder, what are they doing that they're supposed to be doing? I mean, President Trump didn't have a day's peace from the other party.
No, he didn't.
Not one day. I'll tell you one thing. I didn't know much about Mr. Trump, but he has got to be one of the most tenacious, toughest Americans there are. I felt as though he did have some good accomplishments, all the while defending himself from all the missiles that were coming in from the other side. I mean, it's just so non-productive, isn't it?
Very unproductive. No one could have done the job he did, but only him.
It took that kind of guy. I truthfully, my hopes, Joseph, were that President Trump would win that second term.
Yes.
And he wouldn't need to worry so much about what others were saying, because you have the term limits in the United States. We don't here.
Yes.
Which we did. So he really could have got down to the job and paid less attention to the spears and shots that were coming at him, and then just worked on the job. I think he might have been the free world's only hope, being in the most powerful position he was in and being the tenacious man that he is.
Well, I think it's surprising he was able to accomplish as much as he did.
I agree. He didn't start any wars, Joseph. He went over, and you know, he was smart enough, as boastful as he is, and many people are offended by his ego and his personality and things that are not politically correct. Well, I don't know too much. Political correctness isn't so correct, in my opinion, anymore.
No.
He was the kind of guy. I thought I was most impressed when he would come back from meeting with a leader, Kim Jong-un, the man in Korea, and the Russian president. And I'm sure there were some harsh words in some of those meetings, even with the Taliban that he met with. But when he came out of those meetings, he always spoke highly of the other person, said they made good headway, you know, they're friends. You know, he didn't attack them when he got out of. He may have given some strong warnings, like I know he did give the Taliban leader there, that there was conditions-based deal, and if they breached any of the conditions, they would see a bombing campaign like the world's never seen. So he was tough enough, but he was also, I thought, gracious enough after his meetings to that the other leaders saved face. And I had real high hopes. I was really disappointed. It's easy not to like his personality. I watched a psychiatrist early on in his term that said people's own ego are offended by President Trump's ego, and that's the big problem here. But anyway, he got the job done,
Wayne.
Oh, he was a go-getter. He didn't take 18 months to set up a meeting. He got in the airplane
and went.
You know. No, he got the job done. So I'm gathering from the few interviews I've seen with former President Trump that his hat may be in the ring again in 2024.
Yes.
I heard from friends in Florida, Joseph, that President Trump may run for Congress in the district where his home is, Mar-a-Lago there in South Florida, and run for Congress. And the other rumor I heard is that if the Republicans took the majority of seats back in the Congress, that they would make him Speaker. And then, of course, he could still run for president in 2024. So amazing energy for that man at age 75, I think. And
very true.
Unbelievable. You must have a good-sized ego to want to do the damn job at this stage and age, right?
Well, I think, quite frankly, he's the only one that could do it.
Yeah, most people wouldn't want it in his position. And you know, when you see President Biden, I'm sure he's a very nice man. But, you know, I'm not so sure that 50 years in government with a lackluster record was ever going to make a strong president, Joseph.
No,
there's all kinds of issues now, not the least of which Afghanistan and the way that was handled. And did you see President Trump on Fox, the interview about Afghanistan? And then
I did, too.
About 24 hours later, President Biden sent troops back in It's like, oh, yeah, we forgot the citizens. We forgot all the armaments we left for the bad guys. And President Trump said, and the last thing you do, he didn't call them bases, he called them forts. He said, the last thing you do when all the citizens and all the friends are out and all the army equipment's out, blow up those forts. Why would we leave those for those guys?
That's right.
Do you have any political predictions about what's going to happen in this administration? And do you see any changes, or are we just going to rock through this for another couple of years?
Well, I think we're going to see some changes. Whether or not they're going to be the changes we would like to see, I don't know. But I think when we talk about certainly what's ahead, no question we're going to see higher taxes. We're going to see massive continued spending. I don't think there's any doubt about that, Wayne. And we're going to probably continue to see a lot of uncertainty in various parts of the world due to the current foreign policy. But I think when you talk about the positives that we could certainly see as we move forward, I think we're going to have to address very seriously the social concerns that are affecting the average American. I think we've got a lot of poverty, we've got a lot of homelessness, we've got a lot of people that are very sick and elderly, and we got a lot of people depending, as I'm sure you'll agree, on the underfunded pension plans that they're going to sometime in the future draw down to make the living expenses. So I think we've got some challenges, I think we got some problems, and I think it's going to be hopefully not too difficult to move forward in the months ahead and solve some of these things.
Yes, sir, from your lips to God's ears. Joseph, I really want to thank you again for being with us today, taking so much time with me and our listeners. You're always a great wealth of information, and I hope that people are listening and help themselves. And these are difficult times, and advice from men like you is very important. So thank you. Thanks for being with us, folks. Get in touch with the Power Mall. Nothing but the best products. ThePowerMall.com. Talk to Jay. Talk to Catherine. Great people, great products. You can't go wrong, and that's what supports this radio program. Wayne Elliott signing off again. It's been my great pleasure to be with you folks today. And until next time, stay well and God bless.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.